This report does not say that Pebble Mine should or shouldn't be built, but this is about fairness of a federal agency.
A new report weighs in on the EPA's decision on the Pebble Mine. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 6th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Dispatch News begins a new venture that they hope will pay for the paper.
We are in creativity mode all the time, and you have to be.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Governor Bill Walker's administration spent $50,000 on Washington, D.C. consultants to help prepare them for a visit by President Barack Obama. The expenditures were revealed in public records requests by the Associated Press. They also came at a time when the state is struggling with a multi-billion dollar deficit. Perkins Coie was hired to work from July 8th to August 31st. When Obama arrived in Alaska, the contract was for up to $50,000, and a Walker spokeswoman said that was the amount paid. Obama visited Alaska for 3 days on a trip aimed at highlighting climate change concerns. The contract lists Peter Rouse and Mark Patterson as authorized representatives for Perkins Coie. Rouse was a longtime aide to Obama and Patterson, chief of staff to two Treasury secretaries under Obama. Alaska Supreme Court Justice Dana Fabe announced today she will retire next summer. Fabe was the first woman appointed to serve on the court and the first woman to serve as Chief Justice. She was appointed by the Alaska Supreme Court in 1996 by Governor Tony Knowles. Fabe says it was a tough decision to leave the court.
I love the work so much, but it is a 24/7 job, and as a result, very difficult to do anything but the work. And so this will give me some opportunities to do some other things I'd like to do and still serve the court as a pro tem justice and find other ways to serve the people of Alaska.
Fabe has served 3 terms as Chief Justice. She has focused on many initiatives during her time with the court, including advocating for more diversity in the legal system and strengthening relationships between state and tribal courts. She also expanded the Supreme Court Live program, which brings oral arguments to high school students in communities across the state. Her retirement will be effective June 1st of next year. She says she announced she's leaving early because it can take months to fill a judicial vacancy. The Pebble Mine is back in the news this week. Dozens of Pebble opponents were issued subpoenas as part of a lawsuit in federal court. That lawsuit alleges EPA was coordinating improperly with some of the mine's opponents and is now in the discovery phase. Pebble lawyers want to talk with and obtain documents from those who've worked alongside or supported EPA's efforts. Spokesman Mike Heatwall says that will fill in the blanks for the paper trail Pebble has been trying to put together.
The EPA has not been very forthcoming in all of the Freedom of Information Act requests that we have made over the course of several years. And really all we have right now is a very incomplete picture. What we've seen so far has caused us to have a lot of questions about what was really going on behind the scenes of the EPA.
On the receiving end of the subpoena requests are a mix of individuals and groups who've been fighting against Pebble's development. While the subpoenas were not entirely unexpected, some say it's had a chilling effect. Some of Pebble's most outspoken critics are speaking only through an attorney this week. That attorney is Vicki Clark with Trustees for Alaska, an environmental law firm which was itself served a subpoena.
Their discovery request and the subpoenas are extremely broad and excessive. They're not just about communications with EPA, but they are about communications between private parties, just about anything to do with Pebble, and in some respects, mining in general in Alaska. So this is a pretty desperate attempt by Pebble to have a chilling effect on the opposition to the project.
Pebble says one of the key figures who knows what was happening inside the agency for several important years is former EPA employee Philip North. He left the country after retiring 2 years ago, and the agency claims some of his government emails were lost when his hard drive crashed. A federal judge has ordered North to appear in Anchorage for deposition next month. In related news, a report issued today by the Cohen Group says the EPA has acted unfairly in its efforts to put preemptive restrictions in place to block the development of the Pebble Mine. The Cohen Group, founded by former U.S. Senator and Clinton Defense Secretary William Cohen, was hired last March by Pebble to independently review the agency's actions. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
In a press call Tuesday morning, Secretary Cohen summed up on several occasions what a 346-page report with his name on it has to say.
My only very narrow ruling in the sense, or judgment in the sense, is that it was unfair to use 404C on a peremptory basis, and it was unfair to use it using hypotheticals.
404C is the section of the Clean Water Act that EPA says gives the agency authority to block Pebble before the company has applied for permits. The hypotheticals Cohen referred to are the mine scenarios EPA used in its Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, which was the basis for preemptive restrictions the agency has proposed. Cohen's group was commissioned to take an independent review of EPA's involvement, a study that Pebble paid for. Pebble has long accused the EPA of stepping out of bounds and attempting to cheat the developer out of the standard permitting process mapped out in the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. Pebble hoped Cohen would agree and lend his voice and reputation to that allegation, which he did.
Given the magnitude of the issues involved, it seems to me it would have been certainly wiser, but I think ultimately much fairer to the state of Alaska and to Pebble to follow the normal procedure.
The response to Cohen's report from Pebble's opponents Tuesday was as swift as it was predictable.
This report was completely bought and paid for by the Pebble Limited Partnership.
That's Alana Hurley with the United Tribes of Bristol Bay. In the back and forth over Pebble, neither side's science or studies or reviews ever seemed to pass muster with the opposition. UTBB and a host of other Pebble opponents claim the Cohen report is a smear tactic against the EPA's efforts, which are largely supported in Bristol Bay. Hurley says the report is a distraction from the larger central issue.
Like the lawsuit, this report speaks in no way, shape, or form to the fact that the science is very clear on this, and there's still no question in our minds that this type of mining can't coexist with salmon in Bristol Bay.
But that's not what the Cohen Group says their report was tasked to weigh in on.
This is not about the Pebble Mine.
That's retired Air Force General Joseph Ralston, a former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who is now a vice chairman of the Cohen Group.
I understand there may be people in Bristol Bay who have strong feelings about this, but this report does not say that Pebble Mine should or shouldn't be built. But this is about fairness of a federal agency.
Separate from the Cohen report, the EPA's own inspector general is currently investigating the agency's involvement in Bristol Bay, and one of three lawsuits has found some traction in federal court. EPA lawyers have kept the agency near silent on the matter for months, and on Tuesday, EPA offered only a mild rebuttal to Cohen's report. A spokesperson emailed to say EPA stands behind their three-year effort to study the watershed and proposed use of 404C restrictions they say would protect the fishery. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking on the enviro-friendly Obama administration's time in office. What's next for the Cohen report is unclear. It might soon become just an expensive footnote in the ongoing battle for public perception like the Keystone panel hearings of 2013. But Cohen himself says he saw a number of troubling aspects with EPA's behind-the-scenes actions dating back nearly a decade that need further review, perhaps in courts or Congress.
These are big issues, and when you're dealing with big issues, deal with it in a way that's the most open, so that everybody has a chance to have their say on the record and put it to an examination, a critical examination, say, okay, under the circumstances, we decide this can't go forward, et cetera.
Neither Pebble nor the Cohen Group would disclose the cost of the review. Two more things to keep in mind. One, EPA's preemptive restrictions against Pebble are still only proposed at this point and will remain that way likely through the end of the most recent federal lawsuit. And two, Pebble is still without an investment partner to move the project forward and seems a long ways off from requesting to enter the permitting process they say they deserve the chance at. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how do you get middle schoolers to sit through a Shakespeare performance? Put them in the play.
I can sit there and talk to them for hours and hours, but if their friends do it, then we're in like Flynn. Yeah.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Behavioral health officials are in Hooper Bay to help the families and community work toward healing after three suicides this past week. Troopers believe the deaths could be related. KYUK's Lakeed Rashavis reports.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation has already sent emergency health clinicians to the community to assist with debriefing efforts, according to YKHC Director of Emergency Services Chris Burns.
There's going to be boots on the ground today. There's going to be people who are doing debriefings with the family, as well as what we can do to offer support to those close.
Last week, state troopers were notified of a death by suspected suicide. The victim was 26-year-old Noel Tall. Then late Friday evening, Hooper Bay troopers were notified of the death of 24-year-old Eric Demiganuk. Demiganuk was taken to the health clinic, but healthcare workers could not resuscitate him. And Sunday evening, the village suffered another death. Hooper Bay troopers were notified that 20-year-old Miranda Seaton had died. Seaton was reportedly distraught over the recent suicide of Demiganuk, and she died of an apparent suicide, according to the online trooper dispatch. Emergency Services Director Chris Burns says the healing efforts will be ongoing.
Usually there is a healing circle that happens, debriefing fairly quickly. And in Hooper Bay, I expect that would be over at the Tribal Council.
YKHC Vice President for Hospital Services James Sweeney says the first focus is on the families.
The first priority is the family of the immediate person, and then to reach out to people who might be close friends or relationships with them so that we can try to make sure they've got some kind of relief or some type of person reaching out to them, and then we'll reach out to the whole village.
Although neither Burns or Sweeney could cite exact numbers of suicides in the last year, Sweeney made it clear that YKHC's response to these issues is continuous.
This is something that we've sadly had to do several times, and we do on an ongoing basis whenever something like this happens.
Sweeney encourages villages to reach out if they believe there's a problem.
It's a proactive approach, not just a reactive approach. And the more proactive we can be for any of these, the more that we can minimize these events from happening.
Sometimes suicides have a contagion effect. Albert Wall is the director of the Department of Health and Social Services Division of Behavioral Health and says the tragic situation in Hooper Bay has a name.
A loved one or someone who is intimately involved in someone's life that committed suicide often, you know, can enter into a state of despondency themselves. And that's unfortunately a clinical thing that happens. They're called cluster suicides.
The remains of all three victims were sent to Anchorage for autopsy. Mental health experts say suicide is a complex issue and is not typically related to one event. In Bethel, I'm Lakeitra Chavis.
Anchorage's Planning and Zoning Commission last night voted unanimously to move forward with the Northern Access Project. The controversial road would connect Elmore Road and Bregaw Street through the city's UMED district, but it needs to clear several more hurdles before it's built. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
UMED Road has got to go! Hey, hey! Ho, ho!
Despite spirited protests from opponents of the project outside the assembly chambers lasting until the final minutes before the meeting, Anchorage's Planning and Zoning Commission opted to approve the road's proposed route, cutting between the University of Alaska Anchorage and Alaska Pacific University campuses.
All in favor of the Walker motion, please raise their hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that motion carries.
Two members were absent from the vote. The nine members of the Planning and Zoning Commission are appointed by the mayor. commissioners help write policies and ordinances and make recommendations to the Assembly relating to land use planning within the municipality. The current board was appointed by previous Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. The approval comes after the Municipal Planning Division released a memo last week recommending the road go back to the drawing board. As part of the vote, the commission addressed two of the report's major concerns. Shannon McCarthy is a spokesperson for the Department of Transportation. She says one of the changes addresses existing trails in the area.
One was to make sure that the trail system, the winter trail system, is hooked up and continuous, a loop as it exists today.
Another amendment adds a buffer between the sidewalk and the road. It's unclear how the changes will impact the project's budget, which is limited to $20 million. Early in the meeting, commission members were working with an older bridge design that did not include a second pedestrian overpass on the southern end of the road. Chris Schutte is the Director of Economic and Community Development for the Municipality of Anchorage. He explains what happened.
The applicant said, well, since we submitted it, we've kept designing, and the bridge has been added back in. And I think that was an area where there was some miscommunication or perhaps misunderstandings, because the Planning and Zoning Commission, as well as staff, were operating off of a design submission that did not include that.
Though this design was approved with caveats, the process is not over. From here, it still needs approval from the Urban Design Commission and then the Anchorage Assembly. After that comes the permitting process through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Schutte says Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz intends to delve further into the project.
The larger issue of whether or not this road should be built is still something that the mayor would like a chance to work through.
And a big part of that process will be gathering people on both sides of the issue to see if a reasonable compromise can be reached. So far, the two sides have been widely divided. Surrounding community councils and many area residents have been long opposed to the project. Among the road's opponents is Alice Knapp, a 28-year resident of the area.
When they had the preliminary plans for this road, they said that they would provide bike trail access and bike lanes and everything. That's now, and they can't afford that, and so now they've cut it back to a streamlined road that it doesn't have those amenities. And if you're not going to do it right, let's not do it until we can do it right, if that is necessary.
On the other side, advocates for the road say it is necessary. Mary Kay Hughes is a member of the University of Alaska Board of Regents. She says improved access to the UMED district is vital, largely because of the development and growth the area has seen.
It has burgeoned with productivity, lots of square footage added, lots of employees, patients, students. And, I mean, there's about a quarter, probably, of the population, working population, in addition to the people who are served, that go in and out of the UMed district, and it needs to be treated accordingly.
The road plans to use university lands as a right-of-way to connect Elmore Road and Vergaw Street. If all approvals and permits are awarded, construction on the project could begin as soon as next spring. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Learn more about Alaska Pacific University during a three-day weekend experience October 30th to November 1st. Experience the campus and Anchorage while discovering how APU can map out your educational adventure by attending courses, participating in activities, and interacting with faculty and other students. Register at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
A new dating website is trying to help Alaskans find love. The site is owned by a familiar company, and as KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, sheds some light on the unconventional new ways media groups are trying to find money to pay for the news.
So we are logged in as a woman looking for men.
Chances are you haven't seen northernlove.net just yet.
It's a little bit like Tinder without the swiping.
Maya Nolan-Partnow is director of sales and special content at Alaska Dispatch News, the state's largest newspaper, and now operator of Northern Love. Nolan-Partnow couldn't tell me exactly how many people have signed up so far, but just a couple keystrokes into a broad search of guys looking for gals shows us a few hundred spread all over the state, from Sitka the Russian mission.
Your typical dating site. So here's someone who's Christian, he's widowed, he's got a master's degree, he's an engineer. And look, he lives right here in Anchorage, so if we wanted to meet in person, we could.
It doesn't take long for us to click over to a picture of a different guy posing above a dead doll sheep to get a reminder that, like all online dating, it is a mixed bag.
Here's some information about him. He's religious. He's married. Okay.
Huh.
That might not be the kind of person I would be looking for. But as you can see, a wide range of values.
ADN is hardly the first newspaper to venture into online dating. As media companies experiment with new ways to diversify revenue sources, papers like The Guardian and Daily Telegraph in Britain have set up sites to make matches among their readers. It's actually sort of a full circle, since classified ads used to be one of the most profitable parts of a newspaper before the rise of sites like Craigslist.
So this seemed like something that some of our readers would find useful, or at least entertaining, fun, and also pay for the news to ensure that we can keep delivering the news and supporting our mission.
Nolan Partnow isn't sure if Northern Love will be profitable. Dating sites tend to do best when there's a lot of volume in markets like New York or California. But a fringe benefit is that if people are perusing potential partners and compulsively checking messages on their phones, that all drives traffic. And traffic is attractive to advertisers.
Local newspapers and local radio stations are growing, and people also want local dates.
Gary Taylor is a vice president at White Label Dating, the company partnered with ADN to launch Northern Love. White Label works with around 30 clients in the U.S. and basically has a dating site template that newspapers like ADN then tailor to their readers. In exchange for a share of revenues, White Label handles the digital infrastructure and, here's the crucial part, oversees the database of users, which is the currency of online dating. And because White Label is owned by a company with several other prominent dating services in its holdings, the databases, they're all merged together.
From a customer perspective, it's definitely our biggest asset, purely because, you know, people want lots of people to look for. You know, they want to have choice.
This is still a relatively novel approach for U.S. newspapers. Rick Edmond is media business analyst at the Poynter Institute and says American companies have tended more towards diversifying revenues with products like live events, sponsored content, and digital marketing services.
My impression is that this type of thing may be a little bit more prevalent in Europe. I've often heard references to a Swedish group, I think it is, that had a lot of success with a weight loss club.
The one constant right now in the business, according to Edmond, is change. And going forward, Nolan Partnow says everyone is going to have to experiment with new ways to raise revenues.
We are in creativity mode all the time, and you have to be. You have to be in order to be a news organization in a landscape where the way people consume news is always changing.
Northern Love has a free version and a premium subscription service that are both up and running. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Thanks to a national program called Any Given Child, every Juno 8th grader got to see Perseverance Theater's Othello before it closed on Sunday. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, to help prepare students, the theater's education director went into the classrooms and had the students act it out.
So, here's what happens.
Shona Osterhout has 20 eighth graders at Zantakahini Middle School enraptured.
He doesn't believe her because he's had the proof, right? Air quote proof. And he goes to her and he strangles her. Oh my God.
Okay. Othello, played by student Benny Latta, wraps his hands around his wife, Desdemona, played by another student. Desdemona is dying.
And so you can take your hands off her.
Thank you.
And enter Amelia. She's heard a lot of commotion. And she
eighth grader Chloe McAdams goes over to Desdemona.
What has happened here?
And Desdemona. Izzy Luna plays Desdemona.
Suicide, I killed myself. And then she dies.
Oh my God.
13-year-old Dana Tran says it was fun watching her classmates act out Othello.
And it was shocking because I didn't think that he would kill his wife.
Student Lindsay Nguyen says Shona Osterhout's teaching style got her to pay attention.
From her shouting and her, well, not in a bad way, but like the shouting and like her expression, it made me listen.
That was Osterhout's goal, to make Shakespeare's play accessible to the middle schoolers.
Shakespeare just writes about human truths. I mean, he writes about racism, he writes about jealousy, he writes about love, he writes these amazing relationships. And that, to me, just goes through every age group.
Osterhout visited every 8th grade class at Floyd Dryden Middle School and most at Zantakahini. Perseverance also planned post-play discussions of Othello at Montessori Borealis and Juno Community Charter School. Osterhout says getting the students to move around and act the parts instills the plot, and that makes it easier to watch the play.
When they see what's going on and they hear what's going on and the words are a little different and hard to understand, that they'll know exactly because they've done it themselves or they've watched their friends do it, which is always way more important that I can sit there and talk to them for hours and hours. But if their friends do it, then we're in like Flynn, yeah.
A character like Iago, Osterhout says, is easy to get into.
Iago is an archetypal villain. I mean, he is like the villain's villain. When he's on stage, I mean, kids in classrooms over at Floyd Dryden were booing him every time he went, you know, to do something. And for me, that's like the perfect, I mean, that's what Shakespeare would have wanted anyway. He wants audiences to feel what's happening.
Eighth grade teacher Amy Lloyd says she enjoyed watching the students gasp and cheer during the class.
They were all engaged. I mean, everybody was paying attention. Nobody was like squirming around. I didn't have one bathroom pass. I mean, you know, that's a good sign.
The goal of any given child is to provide an equitable arts experience for all students. With the program's launch in Juno, every eighth grader, regardless of what teacher they have or what socioeconomic level they come from, will see Othello for free. A student ticket would have cost $8.
Theater isn't as accessible to everybody unless you get that push. And so I'm hoping this really makes them feel like, okay, if I went again on my own, I'd feel more comfortable. It would be somewhere I've been before and I understand how it works.
In total, about 520 Juno 8th graders saw Othello at Perseverance Theater. It's good preparation for the spring, when they'll be reading Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. In Juno, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Lakeed Rashavis in Bethel, Josh Edge and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.